It's those two assholes, those two idiots you saw me talking to at the third rail.
Just he doesn't want to touch the third rail.
That's, you've hit the third rail for sure.
That is the third rail, saying white people have interest.
Third rail. The third rail here is another wonderful show on the TRS network.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
Watch out for the third rail, baby. That's high voltage.
And the opinion of this reporter, if this nation, or in fact the world, ever needed heroes, that time is now. That time is now.
The witchcraft, combining Chris Chan with the Lucas Room, could be the degeneracy singularity foretold in the Scrolls of Skalos. And this is happening. It is episode 208, 208 of the most huggable Taliban-respecting podcast on the air since 1973, The Third Rail. We are coming to you almost live in the mobile Third Rail studio, where Borzoi is changing diapers, I've lost my meds, and America is a terminal cancer patient. Hi, how are you?
When you say Saturday. Changing diapers, you mean your diaper, right?
Was there any other implication to that sentence?
Just making sure. I wanted to explain the joke for people in case they didn't get it.
When you explain a joke, that's when you know it's a really good joke. It's really hit hard. You really landed the joke at that point.
It's especially funny when it's not funny, because that's the joke.
That's the really funny joke
is actually unfun.
Exactly. As you can hear, my friend Borzoi, my co-host, my eternal life mate, I got to tell you something. Yesterday, it was a proud moment for me. You posted about how you were dumb and how you were ignorant in response to somebody. And I was like, I'm so proud right now. I've taught Borzoi everything he knows, which, if I did my job right, is nothing at all. Hi, how are you doing, Borzoi?
I'm doing good. So, yeah, I got the Borzling here. So, Frank, you might want to get the Borzoi sound panel up ready to go in case I need to mute. That way, like, people won't even be able to tell I even left the show at all.
Graph.
And with us also, Nike, my good Turkish friend. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing quite well. How's yourself?
Oh, not bad, not bad. And you know what? In the control booth. We have TV's Frank. How are you, sir?
Fucking nigger. Boo. Fucking nigger. Boo, boo.
To see about you and your crew and what you guys are going to do.
DK will also be on in a minute.
I just joined. I'm right here.
Okay.
Hello, everybody. Cool.
That hearing.
He just reincarnated into the show.
Oh, DK. Yeah, sorry. I heard you coming on, but I was like, something's coming in one ear or the other, and I'm like, what? Okay, so we got DK, Nike. It's a classic lineup today. How are you doing, sir, DK?
Doing all right. Doing all right. I'm a little bit. We have a lot to talk. I mean, it's slow news week as always. I guess these days.
Jeez. I've got all kinds of prep that I haven't actually read. I'm sure that won't augur poorly for the show.
It's always good to have on another father for the topic I have today. And I think you saw me post about it on Post earlier this week. DK, I need many dad reacts today.
Oh, is this the rescuing of the young girl from horrible situation?
Oh, I'll mention that. I'll talk about that briefly. That had a good happy end. I mean, I'll incorporate it into the topic I have. But
oh, okay.
Yeah, those. I just wanted to offhand mention those Capitol Police hearings. That's never going to get old. Those little fucking fags whining and crying. I fear for my life, and you see Grandma walking in with her MAGA hat, and you're like, Jesus Christ.
Boo, dude, boo, boo. watching this clip of Don Lemon interviewing one of the policemen and, like, playing a voicemail that the officer received in the middle of his hearing testimony of someone just calling him a faggot, like, angrily. It's like, wow, is this me? Because it sure feels like me right now.
I saw multiple people on Fetty who were like, on the Fediverse and Post, who were like, you know, oh yeah, I was the one who called in, and I couldn't rule any of them out.
Yeah, when I started something like that, I'm like, was I drinking yesterday? Was I drunk dialing? What happened?
One thing we all want to do, and we, like, do vicariously through this podcast. Like, podcasting is an opportunity for us to vicariously, like, shit on awful people to their face while doing none of the sort, and probably like no one even close to them hearing it ever. But they accomplished what we all always want to do, which is like let these people know directly how awful and full of shit they are. And it was like that satisfaction of it finally happening was so good.
Oh, yeah. Well, before we even get started with the table of contents and all that, I want to encourage anybody, any of our listeners, all of us, if you want to get involved, you want to do a little bit more than just listening or commenting in the chat, you can get vetted. Send an email to trwrestlemania@protonmail.com. That's trstlemania@protonmail.com.
No, I know you. Many of you think I'm your friend for the online friend simulator we call this thing of ours, but I am not required to become your friend if you become vetted.
Yes, you are.
Ouch. And, that's harsh.
Actually, yeah. Oof. Next one, we're going to set up a booth, and you're going to be chained to the chair.
No,
you've got to meet everybody and look them in the eye.
I will say to the people I met at the last NJP thing, it was really great meeting all of you. That was probably my favorite one I've been to so far. And they were all great, but that was probably my favorite one I've been to so far. And everyone was fantastic. It's always great to meet people and just, yeah, I'm sure they like to see a face, you know, put a face to an autistic voice now. So,
well, it's really good. I mean, like, all these events that the NJP is doing, that TRS is doing, that all these different kind of things that we have going on. You really get a sense of who these people are outside. I mean, all of a sudden, these disembodied voices and people that you've only chatted with on the internet, they become real-life people to you. And you know, once you get to know them and you feel known, it's a good feeling because, like, yesterday I was out downtown and in a moment of extremely not being known or maybe being known too well, I was just walking around near the farmer's market and there's construction going on this parking deck. And it's kind of interesting to watch this huge wall of prefab concrete being lowered into place. And for whatever reason, I didn't have my phone in my hand, so I just was standing still for a couple minutes watching something without conspicuously being on my phone. And there's a homeless advocacy group near this park, and a lady walked over with a box lunch for me and asked if I wanted it because she thought I was homeless. So that's the importance of being known and getting known and being vetted, is that you won't be mistaken for a homeless bum like I was yesterday.
In her defense, since I've been podcasting with you, you have been homeless at least once.
I don't consider it homeless to be traveling constantly and running from the law. Come on now.
Or living on just a random man. Car?
Yeah, the train was my home.
Can we?
Yeah, all right. This is like, this is dollar store James LaFond here.
Yeah, no kidding.
I want to talk about that story, Spectre, of what happened in January 2019 and what we had to do for you. Just rather like skip on that.
Oh no, am I supposed to be embarrassed that I've actually seen and been part of an organization that in a community, nay, a kinship that actually takes care of our own and look out for each other?
You were
the one who came to me at one point and said, you know, it is the typical white man's thing to, you know, I don't need any help, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, when it's your community coming together for you, you graciously accept it, motherfucker. And I was like, yeah, okay.
And consider this like a great, why it's important to get vetted for this. I mean, like, of course, Spectre and I were podcast co-hosts, but I mean, this is the kind of stuff that your local groups can do for you. When Spectre got doxxed, He got kicked out of the work apartment he was in, and we had to figure out something for him to get it so he didn't end up on the streets.
Well, luckily it was on the beach, so I could have slept on the beach if I really wanted to, but I've only ever done that not on purpose, sleeping on the beach. I think you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, let's get to some topics. Jesus, I've got so much prep that I haven't actually read, and this is going to be good. What do you guys have? What do y'all want to talk about?
So my winner is unvaccinated people in Missouri, the Giga Chads of Missouri. My loser is generals who are basically just cat ladies on Twitter. And I might roll in the Afghanistan stuff into that. And then my topic is This Is How It Always Is by Lori Frankel, a book I just recently discovered need to talk about.
Some Jamie prep, but yes.
You saw that talent. Jamie Prep. You saw that Taliban photo, didn't you? The Iwo Jima recreation?
Yeah, I did. That's why I might roll into the general thing. Oh, by the way, DK, just to tantalize you even more about getting you mad about the Lori Frankel stuff, I was doing, of course, she's Jewish, but she's also a Buddhist.
No! Oh, no!
The Jew boo strikes again.
Yes, you just got my blood pressure up. I just felt it.
Yeah. Okay, take a deep breath, DK, and tell us what you got.
I got a couple things. I got too many things. I don't know how to. I'll just spit it out. So my winner was going to be Landlords, and my loser.
Oh God, we finally won one.
Yeah, right. I don't even remember, so it doesn't matter. And my topic, which is maybe, well, I guess my loser would be Chris Chan, and my topic was going to be, there's a relatively short and hilarious article, but maybe it's not important enough, about an art collective of Brooklyn, mostly artists who got ripped off by a Jew in the New York Times, which is pretty hilarious. But then I just noticed, and maybe it's more important, and or at least if we get to it, this article on National Justice about the basically an Israeli porn magnate type guy who, like, Candace Owens and Lauren Boebert and Tommy Lahren all were like some kind of girly magazine type models for before their turn as conservative celebrities, which just got picked up by Vox Day. So there's some interesting, like, Vox Day is now running National Justice articles, which is in itself a kind of interesting development. But yeah, that's what I got.
Okay. Nikkei, you have a hangover, right?
No, actually I don't.
Oh, you're just tired from a long late night with the boys?
Yeah, but I do have some stuff to talk about. There's never a bad time to shit on Olympians, especially when they're losing. So that's my loser for the week.
Nice.
Doing the quick review of what's in the news, I found Gaddafi's son is alive and he wants to take Libya back. So I'm very interested to go through that one.
If Gaddafi was so great, how come they didn't make Gaddafi 2? Gaddafi 2.
Yes. This is like Johnny's best day ever.
Well, and you know, if he can make the comeback and you got the Taliban coming back and even flexing on the U.S. military by recreating that Iwo Jima photo. Frank, did you ever get a chance to pull that up? I think I put that in one of the chats.
By the way, is this what they mean by nostalgia for the aughts? We got the Taliban back. We got Gaddafi back. Is this, yeah, is this
don't call it really a comeback.
Dude, if they put Firefly back on air, then yeah. It's definitely
I saw a Lindy Man tweet that was in the wild that was like, what was it? It was pointing out how Dazed and Confused was a 1996 movie or so, 1990s movie about the 1970s, and that we are as far from 2001 as Dazed and Confused was from the time period it was talking about. It was, you know, it was made about, but 2001 and 2021 feel like the same year. That's rough. Well,
I mean, Borzoi said it before, the world ended on September 11th.
Basically, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, eternal all in hell for the last 20 years.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I don't have mine divided out. I just was given just an embarrassment of riches on prep. ProPublica has an article, What Philadelphia Reveals About America's Homicide Surge, where they spend 10,000 words studiously avoiding saying the word black.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did it reveal? Like, is there something we didn't know? I've been to Philadelphia. I know what it looks like.
We have the Republicans who are finally finding the spine to pose the ATF nominee, David Chapman, that little faggot who wants to take away people's AR-15s and such. The only reason they're opposed to him, though, is because he may have done a racism. That's the only time the Republicans can be counted upon.
We should fill out the context here. Chapman was one of the ATF agents responsible for murdering women and children at Waco. But that's not the issue here, right? The issue here is he may have said a racisms at one point.
That's an even better context to put it in. Thank you, sir. And then we have Biden nominating, oh God, Deborah Lipstadt as the special envoy to combat anti-Semitism. And this unique position that was created by the Trump administration, by the way, has been elevated to the equivalent of an ambassadorship. So at the very least, and it's the only one of its kind, So at the very least, this puts to rest a lot of those tropes about Jews running the government.
How do I get my citizenship in anti-Semitism? Well,
yeah,
we should, again, maybe just a little bit of additional context here. Deborah Lipstadt is the heinous Jew who was at the center of the David Irving stuff. So yeah,
right. And then finally, from our friends at Haaretz magazine, headline: Are Jews white? My response might surprise you.
No,
but we'll get to those.
Do we have to discuss it any further?
Exactly.
Well, if you're a Haaretz writer, then yes.
Yeah. But we will discuss.
Yeah, it's just about the Jewish infighting, the whole, oh, God, we created too much of a victim narrative, and now they won't let us be seen as victims. That kind of thing. That and the whole Zionist versus Palestinians, and, oh, if we don't optics cuck the Jignats, then we'll be seen as the oppressors. And we want to be, you know, keep that position as the eternal victim of all society for the last 3,000 years. Anyway, so there's that. I don't know. What do you guys want to talk about today? What do you guys got going on? Who do you want to start with?
We probably won't be able to get to it. My wife sent this to me last minute. This is something I think I might have one of our researchers do a deep dive on, but there is proof now of the internal social credit system, basically, for like all these different technology for... Sorry, that was the cat that just knocked some stuff over. But we have some proof of this stuff now. I got some, basically, if you know where to find it, it's not like they're hidden back. We got some documents on basically how to do the internal social credit system at these companies. So I might have somebody we'll work on that. But if we need more content, I have that.
I kind of don't feel
that
like
that. That also sounds like, go on.
Oh, I just want to say we're also going to try to introduce a 5-minute potty break at the hour mark.
I was just going to ask if that sounds like a job for a striker too. I don't know if he's on the case, but that sounds like very juicy.
Well, that's a good idea. Yeah, maybe I'll talk to him and send this as a tip to him.
Yeah. So that's coming down the line. I don't know. What do you guys who wants to start? I don't necessarily want to. Okay, I will. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. I guess we could do the do some Giga Chads and get that started, because I think that's very amusing, some of the quotes from that piece, from the Politico piece.
Politico? Which piece?
Yeah, here it is. Sorry, I put it in the wrong chat. Here we go. What's COVID? Why people at America's hardest partying lake... let me pull it. Oops.
Oh, this one. Okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah, sorry. I thought I had all my stuff pulled up, but apparently I didn't. Here we go. What's COVID? Why people at America's hardest partying lake are not about to get vaccinated? I know, buddy. I know. At the Lake of the Ozarks, vaccines are shunned, masks are mocked, and the long-term consequences take a backseat to the time at hand. Okay. So here. The petite blonde bartender in ripped jean shorts bounced to each side of a square-shaped bar as women in bikinis and shirtless men lined up on a sweltering afternoon to order Bud Light, vodka and soda, and piles of nachos at this dockside retreat in the Lake of the Ozarks region.
I was going to say, but sorry, for our listening audience that doesn't have video, we have a picture of this gathering, and it's like, what, 98% white?
I see one black.
Yeah, maybe 99%. There's like 99, literally 100 people in this photo, and maybe one black, maybe two. I mean, it's awesome.
Where's Waldondo?
Well, the story's going to come, but from Borzo. But it probably is worth noting that Lake of the Ozark, being the size that it is and what it represents, the hatred upon the kind of people who enjoy a place like this. They're white. They're probably kind of just redneck, conservative, traditionalist, middle Americans, want to just drink beer, don't give a fuck about your bullshit virus. These people are exactly who the vax nuts and the Jewish cosmopolitan class would love to see dead.
Fucking
they're actually
nigger.
Pushing harm upon these people. This is white America. They hate it.
Oh yeah, and you'll get the sense of it from this article. I'll probably skip around a little bit because I don't really care about the COVID the COVID politics per se. So they go into some of that
scale here. I'm going to imitate DK. I'm going to imitate DK and do a little context that may not be in the article, which is simply that Lake of the Ozark has more coastline than I think all of California. It is you got nearby, you got Branson, you got all these quote unquote wholesome like we're making this very large amusement area, this place people go and have fun during the summer and boat and this and that, maybe go to these amusement parks, whatever. And it's right there in middle America. It's not on the left coast or the right coast. It's not, you know, it's becoming its own tourist like haven for, you know, middle, oh, I don't know, what's the right word I want to use here? For white Americans.
Flyover
country, red state Americans, white Americans, whatever you want to call it.
Heartland.
That has very little, you know, cosmopolitan Jewish international influence on it. And so they really hate something like this. God knows, white people getting together and enjoying themselves. That can't be allowed to stand.
Yeah, and for... Go ahead.
Yeah, I just didn't mean to filibuster. I just want to give a little context.
Yeah, and for people who don't know where the Ozarks are, like our non-American listeners, we're talking about, you know, basically southern Missouri, northern Arkansas. It encompasses a couple different areas, but that's kind of like where the big heart of it is. It's very, very white area, very mountainous, very beautiful place, sparsely populated. So
you're going to get hot blonde girls in cutoff jeans and bikini tops. Guys drinking too much beer, boating. What else would you want in life? Come on.
Your standard pool party.
Exactly.
In a county designated... Okay, let me try this again. In a county designated a COVID hotspot, in a state with one of the lowest vaccination rates in the nation, and in a region where hospitals are nearing capacity as the Delta variant takes hold, Erin, a bartender at Backwater Jack's, couldn't be in a more vulnerable position. She interacts closely with hundreds of maskless customers, sometimes on a single day. She knows most of them are probably not vaccinated, and she doesn't care. She isn't either. I'm living, breathing proof. I've not been sick once. I've been as hands-on as you can be. He knew immediately when I was going to start reading. Wow. I've been as hands-on as you can be with people from everywhere, Erin said. As
now you know, Porter.
And another group of customers climbed out. Okay. You guys want to filibuster for a second? I'm going to pick him up.
Oh. I don't have the story in front of me. Pulled up. Shit. Who has it?
I don't think
he just wanted me to put him on my shoulder. Okay.
Okay.
Erin said as a motorboat thundered to the dock and another group of customers climbed out. Like others who spoke for the article, she asked to go only by her first name. She said she'd heard a rumor, common among vaccine skeptics but also plainly false, that more people are dying from getting the vaccine this week. Personally, Erin added, I feel like my immune system is doing a good job, so why pump it full of something that we don't really know what it is?
How is that not the best possible take?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, is that not a fair question? Are they trying to imply that?
A year ago, Backwater Jack's made national news after the photos went viral of partiers packed inside the pool area, ignoring guidelines to avoid crowds and keep a distance from others. Today, as revelers laugh and toss back drinks in shallow pool water some 600,000 deaths later, they aren't just foregoing masks, they are foregoing the vaccine. Talk of the vaccine draws scoffs, laughter, and even cussing among the clientele. Mask wearing, which is recommended for those not vaccinated, was virtually non-existent, and in conversations with a flow of customers over 2 days, it's clear that many are not vaccinated. Depending on your politics, the scene at Backwater Jack's is either a symbol of reckless abandon or unapologetic living in the face of a pandemic. It is one pole to divide that has erupted across the country, which increasingly seems cloven into two Americas, vaxxed and unvaxxed. In the land of the Ozarks region, where Missourians and out-of-staters pour into boat, fish, sunbathe, and party, to be unvaxxed is a source of identity and at times pride, a totem of one's independence and politics.
So, okay,
what?
Action just farted for a second. Am I there?
Yeah. Yes, you're here.
You know. Oh, great. I think I'm having VPN issues. Hello?
Yeah, we're hearing shaky connection.
Okay. No, I was just going to say, like, this thing about the vax, I don't know if it, does the article go at all into, like, the general situation with the vaccinations and just the absolute shit show it's degenerated into?
I'm sorry, hello? What?
What was that? Sorry, you dropped out just for a half a second. I still missed the sentence. Sorry.
It's all right. Does the article go into the general situation with the vaccinations and how much of a shit show that's become?
I think it might touch on it a little bit. Like, I was skipping around a little bit in it.
Yeah, I just wanted to say it's probably also worth noting in this connection, like the you know, I know we, generally speaking, we've been refraining from COVID politics and for good reason. But in the last week or so, I mean, again, just they didn't even mention it, but it's I guess in this connection, like the CDC has been just flip-flopping rapidly, and there was a study that Pfizer themselves put out, basically noting like they had been making noises earlier about maybe having to take booster shots, and there was like basically the government had come out and said, well, you don't have to say that yet, and then they were like, you know, pussyfooting around. It turns out basically that according to Pfizer themselves in their own internal study, it loses 80%, more than 80% of its efficacy after 6 months, this experimental gene therapy, the mRNA not vaccine. And furthermore, that there is no reduction in all-cause mortality, and in both the control and the experimental groups, that is to say the placebo group and the vaccination group, of about 21,000 people each, there was, I think, one death from COVID in one and two deaths from COVID in the other, neither of which is statistically significant. Basically, it's like neither had any COVID deaths. So the vaccines do not prevent you from dying from COVID, have no effect, and have a bunch of side effects, and in any case, wear off after about 6 months, the Pfizer one in particular. So, like... Yeah.
Well, and like you said, they're flip-flopping. Like, 1 minute they're saying the vaccinated people don't have to wear masks anymore, and then they say that now they're considering that they probably do. There's the study out of Massachusetts that came out, I think, yesterday or the day before.
Yes.
That 75% of the people in this controlled area who caught the Delta variant were vaccinated. Meanwhile, they're trying to push this idea that it's only 99% of unvaccinated. But it's not true. Exactly. If you actually dig down into the numbers, it's 1 in 5 of the people getting the Delta variant are actually vaccinated. Now, is this all a bunch of Finkel think that gets us, you know, wrapped up about something that's it's part of the whole, you know, Jewish world agenda kind of thing, and it's just a manifestation of their hatred of white people? But I don't know. It's a major component. It seems like they're not stopping, and you know, Biden's talking about a lockdown this fall, and I don't want to get too wrapped up in this bullshit, but it's going to get ugly, and I guess. Because I've been paying attention to what the vaccinated advocates say recently, and it's, you know, their hatred towards the unvaccinated is getting really, like, it's becoming more and more open. We're just going to have to use government force. We're going to have to round these people up and force them to get vaccinated. And I really think that the reason that this is all coming about and they're getting so pushing adamant is because deep down they fear they made a mistake. And they don't want to be alone with that.
Well,
they want you to go
power.
Down with them. Well, there's power, but I'm talking about the actual recipients, not the people pushing the shot, but rather the recipients of the shots who become advocates for it. I just think that it's inconceivable to them.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean, though, Spectre. It gives them a taste of being a Janissary, basically.
Oh, I see.
Of giving them petty power.
Yeah, and they can't. It's inconceivable to them that maybe you were right that. The science was wrong. You have to be wrong, and you have to be held down and jabbed. Because if I'm going to suffer this, everybody's going to suffer. And it's going to start manifesting itself more and more. You're going to see it in social media. You're going to see it from pundits and commentators. It's going to get ugly. They're going to turn it up because you have to dehumanize your enemy before you can, you know, do something horrible to him. You have to make the people who are refusing the vaccine look like they're monsters who, you know, have no regard, and so therefore it's. Well within society's right to force you to have it.
And that's what this article is trying to do, but it comes off hilarious. But I'm gonna let DK and Nikkei, if they want to have any other things before I continue, jump back in.
Nikkei, did you have anything on this?
You might be muted. All right, I'll just continue then.
Well, I just wanted, actually, if it's okay, I just wanted to make one last point on this, which is like, when you talk about Spectre, you said it exactly right and how they had been talking about it, which is like, quote, the science. The thing is, like, first of all, I mean, this is maybe a basic bitch point, but it bears repeating. That's not how science works. Science is not like the consensus of, you know, white-frocked priests that we call scientists. That's just not how any of this works. And people had, you know, we all had our, you know, intelligent people are able to read like scientific papers, that's kind of the point of publishing them. Like, it's literally why you publish means to make public, i.e. for consumption of people who are able to read it. That doesn't mean that, you know, I mean, the whole concept of credentials is a kind of heuristic for being able to you know, we can, you know, the value of that heuristic depends upon the relationship between the institutions granting it and the actual kind of epistemic utility of the whole process. Which is to say that lots of smart people from the beginning had lots of questions, and rather than dealing with any of those questions, they've just insisted, oh, we have the authority, the FDA says, the CDC says, you know, never mind that they keep changing their mind on stuff. So, you know, the reason that I'm continuing to harp on this, and then I'll give it back to you, Borzoi, is I've had a lot of discussions actually recently, just very, very recently on this topic. And the thing is, like, non-ideological medical professionals. I mean, I know your wife is a medical professional, and I'm sure she has her stance on stuff. But I mean, like, people who are not particularly ideological one way or the other, whose inclination is to trust these kinds of institutions, like, they're increasingly, especially like normie doctors, let's say, are increasingly in a position of like, what the hell is wrong with the CDC? What the hell is wrong with the FDA? And if they ram through, because right now all of this stuff is under emergency use authorization, if they ram through mm-hmm. full authorization under these circumstances, like, we're not just talking. I mean, like, there's one side of it, which is like, I do actually think that that's going to put acceleration for like physical level conflict, you know, in the cool zone, so to speak, like in a this winter type time frame potentially. But even leaving that aside, you're talking about the complete loss of confidence in the institutions that are supposed to monitor this stuff and regulate it on the part of everyday normie, non-ideological doctors, which is like, that's scary at a lot of, I mean, that scares me in a way more than the other thing does, because then it's sort of like, now things are getting really, really real, if that makes sense.
Just during this whole thing, my favorite thing to hear was the midwit science worshipers saying things like, don't question the science. Like, wait a minute. Oh.
There was
that's how that science Reddit, works.
Yeah, there was that great Reddit exchange where someone was like, "So, you know, I believe in the science and stuff, but I just want to know, like, what exactly is in the vaccine?" And some Redditor responds like, "Science. It's made of science, and you can either, like, you know, spend dozens or hundreds of hours like learning it all for yourself, or you can just trust the scientists that it's science inside that magical tube in your
science juice."
It was like worded specifically like, "Or trust the people who know more than you about it."
It was just absurd, you know.
It's like a self-imposed diaconate defending the priests. It's like, you know, talking down to the laity, saying everything in there is, you know, valid. And if you think you're so smart, you know, I'm not here to educate you, sweaty.
Right.
You know, I don't owe you that emotional labor, sweaty. Just the absolutely class is, like, creating
how it is,
and like sneering, like, just get in line. And it's shocking, actually, just how eager people are to fill that role.
It just reminds me of the Always Sunny episode where Mac proved that science is a bitch and that evolution doesn't exist.
So, I mean, some of you might be familiar with Clark's third law, that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Well, I propose the Borzoi corollary, which is that any sufficiently advanced scientific consensus is indistinguishable from Reddit.
Damn.
Nice. Sorry, we have derailed you horribly, Borzoi. You want to get back to the core of it?
Yeah.
Perfect timing.
I sense a spot to feed him, and then he finished the bottle, and now I have to hold him again. Oh dear, it's okay. All right. Interviews with dozens of the clientele frequenting dockside bars, restaurants, and resorts in this area, famously featured in the Netflix dark drama Ozark, revealed an opposition to the vaccine campaign and a disbelief in news around the Delta variant so intense it bordered on belligerence. No promise, they say, would entice them to voluntarily get vaccinated, not a $1 million check, or a plea from a loved one, or the encouragement of Donald Trump himself. which is that's like that. What I saw that quote is like, yes, this is, I have to read this because even these people are not going to be taken in by Trump when it comes to the vaccine.
Well, it also just speaks to how the Politico writer just assumes that these yep. people are following the, you know, the reason they're doing this is because Donald Trump told them to.
Yep. Among the few who admitted to getting vaccinated, some described being shamed by friends or family. One woman, Brittany Hanlon, who wears a mask while battling cancer, said she was heckled for doing so while walking through a Walmart. "Take off your mask," two women shouted at her as she tried shopping. The women told her that the mask was making them uncomfortable, Hanlon recalled, which I don't understand. It's not like I was doing anything mean or inappropriate. I just had a plain black mask on. Okay, look, I'm sorry, Ms. Hanlon, that you're going through cancer and all that, and you're just kind of a victim in all this, but you guys are getting a taste of your own medicine.
Yeah, this shit happened to us all the time. Where's your mask? Yeah. Fuck you.
So,
that's where my mask is.
I don't have a lot of sympathy. When I say I don't have a lot of sympathy, I mean I have no sympathy.
Well, you got to wonder if this woman even exists because it's a little too perfect. Like, if they had just had a woman who was like being shamed for wearing a mask, everybody'd be like, fuck her. But she has cancer. She's dying of cancer. She might she had a melanoma is what she had, maybe, and... You know. Anyway, go ahead.
An employee at the Haha Tonka State Park Visitor Center in the Lake of the Ozarks area, Hanlon says she wears a mask while interacting with roughly 600 to 700 people a week there. She's typically greeted with sneers and requests that she remove it.
Good.
These moments, evidence of how social pressure can often pull away from public safety measures, underscore the hurdles of Biden administration now faces as it battles a resurgence of the virus across the country. I'm going to skip all this, a bunch of CDC stuff, which I think we already kind of talked about there. Those interviewed here had various reasons for not getting the vaccine. They felt overwhelmed by what they described as near hysterical media coverage of the pandemic. They suspected greedy pharmaceutical companies were simply trying to line their pockets. Offers of money and incentives in exchange for the shot were met with even more skepticism.
Wait. There's something wrong with these people. We can't bribe them. They're not responding to money, to shekels. This has to be stopped.
So this is what it means to become ungovernable. Now, why would they be giving it away for free, asked A. McNay, as he sat at Shorty Pants Lounge, another packed venue less than 15 minutes away from Backwater Jack's. McNay asked that his full name not be used. Like many people here, he was suspicious of the government and the media and didn't want too much of his personal information being revealed. "If you think you can trust your government," he said, "ask the Native Americans."
Stick up for yourself, white man. You don't have to rely on a minority to get your moral point across.
Using like cliche Facebook memes to just dunk on the journos.
I mean, it is a good troll. You could do the same thing with like the Tuskegee syphilis experiment. Like, you know, I would never use the stuff among internally, but basically, if you're going to thumb your nose at a journo, there's worse ways to do it.
Oh, I guess you're right. I'm kind of tired. I police our side whenever I see people. Lending moral authority to any point or argument by involving a minority. It's just like, I'm done with that. I'm so over that.
Yeah, it's not the talking point I would use, but...
I get what you're saying.
I'll give him a solid B-.
That's fair.
Known for its Cajun cuisine, Shorty Pants was brimming with customers on a recent weeknight. A live band took requests to the delight of dancing guests who twirled to Journey or played air guitar to AC/DC. A group of 12 sitting nearby celebrated birthdays by downing a round of shots. Inside, McNay sat alongside with a half dozen other customers who likewise lamented what they viewed as a breathless push for vaccines. Two bartenders floated in and out of the conversation, dropping comments like, "What's COVID?" to laughter. Just recently, a beloved cook at the restaurant had died from the virus, they said, but they hadn't changed the thinking around vaccinations. The cook, they reasoned, likely had other underlying complications. "We don't know what else was wrong," said Mert. Go ahead.
I like how they write that in a way that makes it sound like they're just like grasping at straws. He probably had underlying complications. When, if this is a cook at a southern restaurant, he's probably black, probably obese. Probably smokes. They could have checked to see that he had actual underlying conditions. They didn't. They want to leave it where these people are just being reckless and grasping at straws rather than the reality, which is that nigga died because he fat.
Okay, I'm just seeing how much more is left in here. If this is, I don't think this whole thing is worth going through. I just wanted to get to some of those funny comments. Like, this basically the fundamental point of all this is that there is two Americas that's emerging, and I'm in the other America, and we don't want to talk to you, other America.
No, man, I hope the Case Nightmare Kitty, like, the vaccine is a bioweapon and you just all die of COVID. Like, that would make my life a lot easier.
God, I only
wish. He ain't wrong.
Like other places, well, you know what? You guys want to move, because we have so much prep, you guys want to move on to something else, because the article kind of goes, I'll end it right here. Hubbard, a gregarious 57-year-old who is a regular here, pulls up a chair to the bar to explain what's really happening will blow your mind. As he talks, he wraps his arm around his wife, who is wearing a blue bikini, of which he frequently comments. The two had just spent the afternoon on their motorboat, tearing through the scenic waterways and coves that lure so many to this destination. Asked what proof he had of his claims, he clicked his tongue twice. I can't give away everything, baby.
Oh my God! The Virgin Journalist versus the Chad Boomer.
Yeah, and this is why I love this article, because this shows how unlikable and tone deaf these people are. They don't realize this only endears people to these type of people. I mean,
yeah, here's this Chad. He's got his wife. She's wearing a cute blue bikini. He's kind of like, you know, got his arms around her, just like enjoying the day. I ain't telling you shit, Journo.
It's like I'm just imagining a Guy Fieri doppelganger with his, you know, smoking hot babe in a bikini being like, now a good magician don't reveal all his secrets. Just something like cliche and but still like biting in a self-aware kind of way.
You know, the writer for this,
I'm loving this article,
Natasha Korecki. She was just like seething the whole time watching these hot chicks walking around in bikinis and drinking and having fun. And, yes, baby.
I wonder if she was wearing a mask while doing these interviews.
That's a good question. Did you ever do the background check on the author, Borzoi?
No, I didn't. I've been kind of slammed. I didn't even see who wrote it.
Natasha Korecki. Only thing I looked into, the only thing I could find for sure was that she's immigrant from Argentina. And with a first name Natasha from Argentina, sounds very Eastern European.
It's possible, but don't expect basically, like, for example, the name Ivan is very popular in the Spanish-speaking world because of the associations with Russia back when the communism was a bigger thing down there.
That's a good point. I don't know. She's a woman, so she's always going to set off. Any woman automatically halfway sets off my Judar. That's just a given. Well,
I am actually going to finish on this because this part is actually interesting. And this is why the Biden has said that he wants a strong Republican Party. The Biden administration is hopeful that conservative influencers can help convince those hardened against the vaccine to drop their opposition. But past attempts at persuasion haven't fully worked.
You mean like Candace Owens and Tommy Lauren, who were porn stars for an Israeli pornographer? Is that what you're talking about? Conservative influencers?
And yet, even if requiring vaccines is the lever the Biden administration ends up pulling, those who know Missouri say they don't expect people's behavior to suddenly change overnight. There are cultural elements at play here, after all, more powerful than mere acts of politics. The irony is, it's not the dumb rubes in Missouri who don't understand the nature of this disease. Greg Keller, a longtime Republican consultant in Missouri. Missourians understand this far better than the supposed medical experts we've been giving tens of millions of dollars every year.
Hell yeah. That is the completely unabashed, like, rejection of this, you know, authority framework. Yes, we will outright say, citizens of our state know better than these so-called experts. And that, I'm glad to see that's being doubled down on.
Again, you look through the photos, and you could tell the photographer was just, like, seething also, because they're trying to find all these images that, basically, it's just white people having a good time, you know? Like I said, girls in cutoffs, guys in, like, bathing suit and cowboy hat, and they're all walking around smoking and drinking and just, you know, living life, fishing, boating, you know, it's... They're trying to get that... They want their readers, the political readers, to see this and just have that hatred. These disgusting white people. How dare they defy us?
But one thing that they do mention this that it's kind of clear is it's not going to be Biden force, you know, the government forcing the vaccine. It's going to be the effort's going to come from the private sector.
But by the way, I'm going to go on a limb and say Natasha Kareki probably is Jewish just based off the fact that she interacts with the ADL.
Mm-hmm. Well, also it would be Karecki, and that would be a Polish name. And yeah,
okay. So I know it's a Polish. I know it's a Polish name. So I wasn't sure if it was like a Jewish Polish name or what.
It doesn't have to be Jewish necessarily, but with the ADL connection, and yeah, I think we can call it 75% at least.
Oh yeah, 75% is 100% to me. All right. We got about 10 more minutes before we try to take our first ever mid-show break.
All right. Well, is it? Let's talk about Chris Chan, if that's all right.
If we must,
it's not all no, right. But we can.
I think everything I said to you yesterday, DK, in that text was, I really regret asking why he's trending, but. And you told me, and then I was like, my regret was well earned.
Let me see if I could pull up the. You have to understand, like, Chris Chan is the world soul. Chris Chan is the most documented human in history. We know more about the minutiae of his life than we do about the lives of Jesus and all the Caesars and all the kings who have ever existed put together. He is the internet made flesh, or he is like everything just about this disgusting pig system all rolled up into one. And if you can't keep your gaze on him, if you cannot, like, you stare at Chris Chan, you stare into the heart of the abyss. If you don't have the stomach to do that, then you don't have the stomach for what comes next. Is my stance on it. And people were like, I was sharing some. So I guess we should get it. I don't think Chris Chan himself needs much in the way of introduction. He's a mentally disabled autist who is a lol cow. He's like the ur lol cow. I don't know that the concept of lol cow existed prior to him. You know, at first it was kind of funny. Then it was kind of sad. Then it was really sad. And then yesterday we learned that he sexually abused his own mother, who's an 80-year-old Alzheimer's patient. Like, basically her mind is not there. She's demented. And he, it's, a, I don't, I didn't live, there's apparently some kind of audio recording, where he relays to a trusted confidant, that he did this. I have not listened to this recording. I'm not going to listen to this recording. I was sharing some kind of black humor about this on post, and people were like, oh my God, dude, stop. I'm like, no, I'm not going to stop quite yet, because like, I don't think people need to understand Chris Chan is 2021 America. He's a retard who turned into a tranny and then raped his mother. This is what you created, Zog. This is what you are.
Morso, what were you saying about him being ahead of the trend, but not really? He is the trend? I think Borzo had to go mute, so I'm not going to try to paraphrase exactly what he said, because
yeah, I was trying to find that screenshot myself, and I couldn't. Yeah, if you want to keep going for a minute, yeah.
Oh yeah, I was just going to fill a little time. My reaction on that was he's the logical natural outcome of the pig American system. I mean, he's like the, if you're O negative, you're the universal recipient and of blood, and I feel like he's like the O negative of human beings. Like, everything awful on the internet and in modern society, he was influenced and moved by more than anyone else. And that's why he is kind of, like you said, the symbol of
this. Yeah. So here we have two takes that I think people need to be, that are good. Here's one from Kiwi Farms user Syntaxion 12. Daily reminder, Chris is the canary in the coal mine for society. Foreshadowed the brony community. I forgot about that. Being one of the first major adult My Little Pony fans back in 2008. Foreshadowed the modern tranny community when he started cross-dressing in 2013 and became a troon in 2014, which is ahead of the curve on all this stuff. And now he turned into a schizophrenic, incestuous rapist. What does that say for the future of society? And Borzoi had a great Telegram post on his Race Wars channel. He notes, some think that Chris Chan was ahead of the trends like trannyism, but he is the trend. Chris has no agency. There is nothing about him that wasn't informed by consumption of corporate products, online validation, and trolling. If you even followed his life in a cursory way, every notion, idea, and identity he had was implanted in there by something or someone else. That's why I called him the millennial world soul. Chris isn't a person. He isn't some mentally ill lolcow we laugh at. People could have left him alone, and he'd have faded into obscurity as most lumpen proles do. He was a blank slate, though, that people threw themselves into and helped shape and influence and whisper disgusting things into. There is no reason for Chris to be the most documented person in history. The reasons are reflected in the Christorians, that is, you know, the people following him. Chris is the reflection of a society that not only tolerated this, but actively created this. If you don't like it, I suggest taking it up with those who have power. Yeah,
I want to ask you this. Consider the mores, the principles, the values, and beliefs of the modern Judeo left, the libtards. Actually, even a lot of fucking Republicans. What in their worldview would condemn anything that Chris Chan is or has done?
Exactly.
Is he like? Would he?
Well,
like,
there's the welfare.
They can't condemn him.
There's the going on welfare and disability.
Well, yeah, some GOP guys. Yeah,
that's what the GOP would have a problem with. Yes,
it's like,
you're right.
Yes, look, okay. You have to spend all this time at the Virginia, Department of Gibbs or whatever they call it, to get your welfare check, and you're just standing there all day doing nothing. This is the problem with Americans today, you snowflakes and your special gender identity disabilities. That's all they can say.
Yeah. In the chat, fellow, he's really good at like summing things up in a very short, pithy. He's almost like a Bob Whitaker kind of style to him. He says Chris is the blank slate who absorbed the messaging perfectly.
Exactly. And yes, and it's good to see you in the chat, TF. That's exactly where I wanted to sort of wrap this around with, Spectre, was your question and your point there. And to note, I have a cruel streak both for myself and others. It's true. And I was like, no, I'm not going to avert my gaze, and I'm not going to let you avert your gaze either. So I was digging into this a little bit. And, in the process, I learned that, there was a video from like 4 years ago where Chris was basically responding on Facebook to an article about mother-son incest. And it was interesting because the tack that he took on it was like, okay, this is not socially acceptable, and it may even be wrong in some sense, but you know, maybe there's reasons for it, and they, you know, if they consent and they want this, and there's no, you know, possibility of child, you know, if she's postmenopausal, there's no possibility of childbearing, like, you know, really there's no danger. And that's where we end up. I know the TDS guys were doing this talking for a while about this lecture by Joseph Fischel, the horrendous, heinous gay Jew who's, you know, advocating for pedophilia, necrophilia, and bestiality, and you know, this whole topic of consent, and this is sort of where this is the logical endpoint of the whole building your system as a premise on the concept of consent. And this is why they were so, you know, they replaced traditional sexual morality grounded in you know, Christian, like, essentially ontology, right? Like, there's a whole cosmology, and there's a whole ontology. There's a whole, like, it's not even just about, like, you know, oh, this is harmful in some kind of broad sense. It's like, no, God created man and woman. God created man and woman. They have certain characteristics. There's a plan. There's a reasons for this. And when man and woman come together, that's, you know, Christ and the church coming together, mystically reflected in each other. There's much more to it than any kind of narrow conception of harm or pleasure or anything like that. So when you remove all that and you make it about quote unquote consent, like, then the only kind of fallback that you have philosophically, like, once you get rid of all that other stuff, is, like, yeah, basically stuff about You know, well, incest is, it's not, incest can't be wrong, because, you know, the best you could do is, well, you know, maybe one family member is taking advantage of another family member from within a position of power. Then, of course, you get Jews like Joseph Fischel saying, like, yeah, but men are in a position of power relative to women. So on what basis do you say that that's any different? Furthermore, and this just occurred to me yesterday when I was sort of thinking this through, in a society in which the word eugenics is a dirty word, right? Mm-hmm. What is the basis for saying that, you know, children born of incest or who are more likely, to some extent at least, of having genetic anomalies, like, so what? If you can't have a concept of eugenics, if you can't have a concept of racial hygiene, yeah, then, like,
if it's all consent, then there's no moral judgment to be made, much less any concern to, you know, risk further down the line, because it's about your cummies. That potential
right? You know, like if you're a hemophiliac with multiple sclerosis and you know, mentally retarded, like, yeah, you're
genital,
you're
all criminal, equal, whatever.
We're all equal, right? So it doesn't matter, like, you know, you're the inbred child of the, you know, multiple generations of father, daughter, incest, or whatever it is, like, you know, so what? Like, it doesn't, you know, we're all equal, right? We all get to vote. We all, you know, one man, one vote, one woman, you know, we're all equal, right? So, like, you know, what do you mean? Are you some kind of Nazi eugenicist? You think there's something wrong with people being born with genetic anomalies?
Uh-huh. Well, that's a very large percentage of it, but I think also there's that lack of morality and future time side. I just coined that term. where, you know, the potential future mongoloid baby that you're creating that will be an abomination and a drain has no moral value compared to your cummies. That's the important, just like with abortion.
Yes, yes,
that's exactly, you have that abortion. Yeah. The consequence of you having unprotected sex and having to kill a child in your womb just for your convenience so you can have your cummies, there's no moral calculation there. And I feel like that's also at play in this.
Well, hell, I mean, like, that reminds me of some of the arguments we've heard recently from Republicans on like justifying their positions to pass laws that say you can't abort based on like some prediction of mental defects or retardation because of eugenics and that being bad, not because of any moral opposition to abortion on principle in and of itself,
right?
But on the fact that it's eugenics and we don't do that here, those aren't our values. That's exactly their argument.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, exactly. That's in the background. That was in the background of my mind when I was saying that. Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay. Of all the condemnation that you have seen in the last couple of days of Christian, and I want to get off this topic before it really disgusts me. It's fair. Of all the condemnations you've seen, it's been either from our side or people on, you know, our thing, you know, condemning him for incest and basically condemning him. Or feeling pity that he is, like you said, the millennial world, or like Borsley said, the millennial world soul. But there hasn't been a lot of other condemnation. But what if the
trannies are like?
Think if he had admitted to saying nigger instead of molesting his mother, mother.
Can you imagine shit. The thing that, and this is sort of like, for me, it was just the final confirmation of, you know, what precisely the nature of the phenomenon we're dealing with here is that all the Twitter trannies were like, it's her. Chris, he may have done something horrible, but he's a woman. She's a woman, okay?
She identifies as a woman. Don't misgender Christina.
You can't, misgender, there's no excuse to misgender her.
It's like, this is yet another cope to add to your list of many copes in your life, tranny.
This is why you could literally go to and rent every horror movie ever made, and they would seem like comedies.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the world that we live in.
The important thing is we're not speaking German.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things...
Honestly, this is the most sophisticated version of hell I've ever... You know, because Dante had his version, and then, you know, Grugs have their, you're just burning in a lake of fire, or, you know, there's the metaphysical, you know, hell is the removal from the grace of God. There's all these ideas of heaven and hell, but I think this existence of hell, where there's just enough hope and reason to in an insane world to drive you nuts... I think this is a pretty good job, Satan. You created a good hell this time.
One of the things I was thinking about just introspectively of like why I don't want to listen to the actual phone recordings of it, and frankly, read any of the details either. It's not that it's like too disgusting to handle. It's that I think on a certain level, I know that I can handle that. I know that I can stomach it, and I don't like being reminded of the fact that that's true. Like, it's another test in, it's another endeavor of, all right, here's, you know, the deepest depths of, you know, cartoonish depravity we can imagine, but it's real. So, you know, now you have to deal with that impact on your mental hygiene. But, like, the fact is, we've already seen and heard, like, awful shit. And I don't like being reminded that it, you know, this doesn't actually mentally damage me as much as it really should. You know, if, like, I maybe it's just me, but, like, I have this impression that this should be, like, more horrifying than I really feel about it. Like, obviously it's disgusting, but it's just, like, we're already here, and, like, I'm already used to hearing about terrible, awful shit like this. And yeah. I don't like that fact.
Simulation. Simulacrum. Industrial society. Technological society. Nihilism. Technocapital. Lumpenproles. Graph.
Man.
Collapse.
Before we do, Tolerant Fellow has another banger. The Statue of Liberty should read, "Abandon all hope, ye who enter."
Oh my God. that jogged my...
I wish that was shorter for a show title.
That reminded me of, like, something I had said about this yesterday, was that as many of you know, Chris Chan lives in Charlottesville, and this new revelation about what he's done to his mother is the real reasons why the statues have been taken down.
I just want to compare the sentences, assuming he ever gets sentenced, to James Field, right? Because, you know, James Field getting in a car accident is like 400 plus years of jail time versus this is, you know, will he even be prosecuted?
I don't know, man. I've heard that there's a basically restraining order, just do not contact mandate that the cops placed on him. Like, he took the...
But he's kicked out of his house. He's not allowed in that building, and they're examining her for evidence of sexual assault. And anyway, yeah, I think we should transition off this. I just wanted to...
Can you guys hear me? I just want to quickly on my phone give you the show title. Abandon all cope, all ye who enter here.
Oh.
Perfect.
Yes.
Perfect.
All right. And with that, we can hit the break.
Body break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Frank, I assume we'll be able to figure out some kind of stingers or outro music or whatever for the break. But yeah, we'll be back in just a minute. If you're in the live audience, stick around. We'll just probably bullshit with you guys for about 5 minutes. So, see you in a minute.
Hey, you!
Me?
Yeah. Can you write?
Yeah.
Not an email.
Oh.
On paper.
Sure.
You can write a paper.
Yeah.
Okay, you can write a paper to a guy in jail?
I should, right? I mean,
yes, you absolutely should.
They need mail and connection and...
It's called G Minority Initiative.
Oh, it's Global Minority Initiative.
What?
GMinority.org. You can find out, like, how to write to prisoners. You can load up their commissary with money. Do you have a little bit of money?
Yeah.
Just a little bit?
A little bit.
A little extra.
Sure.
Well, why don't you give it to some of our guys behind the wire? Let them know they're not forgotten.
Okay.
GMinority.org.
All right. We are back. Somebody mute their YouTube or something? Yeah, okay. I was getting an echo. Echo! Oh, God! And speaking of echoes, Borzo will be back with us in just a minute. Thanks for rejoining us. Let me fill a little bit of time here with just really quickly from Heretz. Are Jews white? The answer is no. Close the tab. Story done. They also had a story in ProPublica, which is that nonprofit that, like, Craig Newmark and a whole bunch of other, a whole lot of, like, Wall Street money goes into it, supposedly being journalism holding power to account, but it's really power using journalism against people. But they have this 10,000-word article on the homicide surge going on over in Philadelphia. And, I mean, I tried to slog through it. I really did. But it's just impossible because it's just it's maudlin. It talks about, you know, all these, poor Shaniqua, poor Jamarcus, future ahead of him, going to be an astronaut, going to cure cancer, shot down because apparently they stepped on somebody's sneakers. I mean, just the usual, but they're not they will not acknowledge that the whole, you know, BLM thing last year has caused either white cops to all quit, to not want to interact, or to just, you know, not answer calls. Why bother? Or, you know, why bother enforcing the laws when you have a DA in Philadelphia, Larry Krasner, a Jew who is backed by George Soros, who is actively going after anybody for white for doing things like placing stickers in public places while dropping charges against black defendants for pretty much anything. I'm not exaggerating when I say that. One of his campaign promises was he said the way forward for justice is to decarcerate, to get more people out of jail. So this is not hyperbole. This is not me like, no, this is his own words. This is what, and that's what's going on in Philadelphia. There's no arrests, or, you know, the arrests are minimal. They spend more of their resources harassing Patriot Front for doing a little march, a little, you know, First Amendment free speech thing. And they drop charges, they lower charges, they cut plea deals. All these blacks are just getting back on the street. So of course there's a surge. But more importantly, I think, the thing that they don't want to admit is blacks are more violent and commit more crime. If society is not actively keeping a boot on the neck of black males 13 to 45, crime explodes. And when you have a DA like Larry Krasner, who is so bad that entire police units are just massive resignations among senior officers, detectives, the foot patrol guys. I mean, that's what's happening. But they won't admit that. It's all about somehow all this crime is happening to black people. And the bottom line is society's unfair and white supremacy and blah, blah, blah. But that was the other article I pulled in for prep. I wanted to see, Borzo, are you back?
Yes, I am. And Borzling's sleeping, so we
I didn't mean to filibuster too long.
I just got back, and the Borzling is napping, so we got to take this opportunity to do my prep because I really wanted to talk about this.
Absolutely.
So I was visiting a friend of my mom's recently. Doesn't matter why, and she's got a college age daughter who I'm used to seeing kind of the crappy books strewn about the place, and this is a woman who's basically training to become one of the she's single, bro. Not answering that, Frank. She's training to be, you know, part of the janissary class, the white woman bureaucratic class. And so she had this book lying out called "This Is How It Always Is" by Lori Frankel. Now, as I said before, yes, as though I needed to confirm this, yes, she is Jewish. Also,
I love how the title is called every single time.
Oh my God. So I wanted to talk about it because I read the back of it, and here's what it says: "This is how a family keeps a secret, and how that secret ends up keeping them. This is how a family lives happily ever after, until happily ever after becomes complicated. This is how children change, and then change the world. This is Claude. He's 5 years old, the youngest of five brothers, and loves peanut butter sandwiches. He also loves wearing a dress and dreams of being a princess. When he grows up, Claude says he wants to be a girl. Rosie and Penn want Claude to be whoever Claude wants to be. They're just not sure they're ready to share that with the world. Soon the entire family is keeping Claude secret until one day it explodes. This Is How It Always is a novel about revelations, transformations, fairy tales, and family. And it's about the ways this is how it always is. Change is always hard and miraculous and hard again. Parenting is always a leap into the unknown. With crossed fingers and full hearts. Children grow up, but not always according to plan, and families with secrets don't get to keep them forever. This is a novel everyone should read. It's brilliant, it's bold, and it's time. Elizabeth George, number one New York Times bestselling author of A Banquet of Consequences."
No, it is not.
So this book came out in 2017, and maybe some people were talking about it, but we all missed this because we don't read this type of fiction, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this, because if you know
know, if you know quote unquote normies or liberal family members or the like, whatever you want, whatever average people, whatever you want, like this is the stuff that's being pushed and being put in book clubs and all that. And because we don't participate in that stuff, we completely miss this stuff. And we get the shots on this and the content and all that. So I don't think it's like required to do like a deep dive into this novel. But this is the stuff relatives of yours might be reading, and people need to be aware of this stuff. I actually went into the Goodreads and I found some of the quotes. There's one that's going to be a howler that you guys are going to quite enjoy, given that what we know about Lori Frankel now. Let me see. Here it is. Where's the one? Oh, yeah, here it is right here. "Just because it's made up doesn't mean it isn't real," said Penn. "Made up is the most powerful real there is."
Oh, my God! That was in the wrong book, wasn't it? Wasn't that about the Little Holocaust Adventures?
The Brave Little Holocaust?
Yeah. it's Brave Little Oven. It's disgusting. It makes you hate women.
That might be the show title, actually, The Brave Little Oven.
What was that?
That might be the show title, The Brave Little Oven.
No, it's just, this is not some little artifact, some weird outlier you found, Borzoi. The sheer volume of propaganda of children's books aimed at promoting Trumanism and, you know, just undermining, I mean, just destroying children. Destroying their childhoods, destroying their innocence, and destroying them as human beings. This is just one little piece of that puzzle. It's just amazing that you found it the way you did, and this particular one, Jesus.
So here's one of the reviews. This is actually one of the more tepid reviews from Brooke on Goodreads. Brooke rated it 3 out of 5 stars. "I'm really conflicted on the rating for it. This is how it always is, because on the one hand, it's great that this book has so many positives and doesn't end on a pessimistic note. We need LGBTQJAP+, JAP, like Jewish American Princess Plus, is that what you're saying? Stories that don't end in tragedy. We need more of these books in general.
The J is the Janissary.
I should do an ABC book for our guys where it's like G is for graph, J is for Janissary.
I'm sure Hello Hill would publish.
Just gotta get an illustrator for it. "On the other hand, at times there were such unrealistic situations taking place that I was wondering if the author was living in fantasy land. You'd have to suspend disbelief to enjoy it. It's clear that this is a personal story for Frankel, even though she makes it clear this isn't based off one specific person, her daughter, or her own experiences. With that in mind, perhaps this is truly what Frankel wishes for herself and the world, which is wonderful, but it's not peachy keen for many families, and that's where I got a bit distraught. At its core, though, I did like this story, so 3 stars it is. The greatest thing that felt unrealistic to me, Rosie and Penn, they are such supportive parents. I wish this was the case for everyone. They are protective and move the family across state lines for safety reasons. Many families cannot afford to just leave when the going gets tough." You know what? I actually know a story of somebody who had to move across state lines, but Brooke, it's a bit of a reverse situation. Safety reasons include a father who discloses he doesn't want his son to play with, I think that's supposed to be fags. "Other than this family, there is no blatant violence against them that is really threatening. For the most part, people understand or don't know. Then when Claude's secret is revealed, Rosie takes Claude to Thailand."
What? Wait, Claude's the husband?
No, Claude is the boy.
Claude's the boy.
The boy.
There's only one thing that you can associate with that. Without having read the book and knowing exactly what goes on,
Dude, that's the only thing I associate Thailand with.
Yeah.
Is there anything that goes on in Thailand besides ladyboys? I mean...
No.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, go on.
That's actually the story. You're not making this up.
That's what a reviewer says. At one point, the mom takes the son over to Thailand.
Reaching for my flammenwerfer.
A 5-year-old.
Oh my God. Yeah, and that's how they afforded his surgery.
Thailand. This is actually worse because I did a little bit of background information to Lori Frankel. So Lori Frankel's got a number of articles that's been written about her, that's been going on for a while, because the daughter, the quote-unquote daughter, the son that is transgender, is an adopted Korean boy, And if I'm not mistaken, I forgot to double check this, it wasn't Jazz Jennings like also like adopted like a Palestinian or something?
I think so.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Oh, you didn't know that?
No, that makes it even more fucked up.
Yeah.
We need to take this book and give it to Best Korea and let them know that if they cease being the wonderful Best Korea that they are, this is what they're going to do to Korean children. They're going to adopt them and cut their dicks off.
Yeah, I don't know if... Yeah, I know Jazz Jennings is adopted. That much I know. I think he was Palestinian, but I just heard that from somebody, but I know Jazz was adopted. That much I know. And like, that's what made me raise an eyebrow when I found out about this Lori Frankel and that her kid... I hesitate to even call that her kid because it's just an experiment, basically. She adopted that she could do something that it's she could just do.
The child that you stole.
Yeah. But so I got some articles that are from Lori that are by or about Lori Frankel. Let's see here. So this one's raising a transgender child in the age of Trump. Lori Frankel, being a girl is hard but awesome. Let's see here. Let me see where she starts talking about. Here we go. Actually, let me start from this. In my 20s in graduate school, I thought a lot about my daughter. She didn't exist yet, but when you're studying fiction for a living, this doesn't matter as much. I had long observed that being a girl in the world was tricky, but in graduate school, for the first time, I started to look critically at why and to consider what might be done about it. I started keeping a list of what a girl starting from scratch, my someday infant daughter, would need to know to help navigate and advocate from the get-go. There were things like being a girl is hard but awesome. Girls are smart, strong, talented, and capable. You can do anything you want. You're beautiful, your body, your face, your hair. Anyways, she's got this whole list. Years later, when the time came, I had a boy instead. The list is different for a son. He didn't need me to tell him any of those things. The whole world was telling him he was awesome. The whole world thought he was beautiful no matter his shape or size. He never imagined there would be things he couldn't just do because he was male, and he was right. So I went ahead and worried about all the other.
This is a peek inside the mind of a woman you never want to speak to. The kind of woman. Well, that too. But just that, they're absolute, you know, the way they're so caught up in this whole, men have the whole world handed to them. It's really hard for women. They are the ones who need the encouragement. I'm like, when you're born a girl, you're playing on easy mode.
You need to encourage all of your kids. Okay, let's not specify encouragement to one gender or another.
No, of course not. I'm just saying.
It's like,
the reality is it's harder for boys, but obviously both your kids need the encouragement. But this woman, she's going to abandon. I mean, she didn't. I can see we all see where this is going. Sorry, Boris, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was really bothered by that passage.
I don't really want to read the rest of that article because there's three different articles, and you got the gist of the inside of her mind. It just goes on and on and on. Here's from WBUR.org. I don't know what that is. It's some, I don't know, probably. Anyways,
that's Boston's NPR station.
Oh, thank you. From He to She in First Grade with Jennifer Beals. Sometimes parents have to, this one's from February 2018. Sometimes parents have to make an excruciating decision. Should they prioritize their child's safety over their happiness? That's the question Lori Frankel confronts in her piece From He to She in First Grade. It's read by Jennifer Beals, who stars in the NBC drama Taken. Oh, yeah, this child was taken, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Lori Frankel's daughter is in fourth grade now, and she is very happily a girl in a skirt, but Lori says it took some time for her daughter to feel clear about her gender identity. There was not a single moment where she did become sure, Lori says. Over winter break, when she was no longer going to school every day, she asked us to switch to female pronouns, and that was the moment for me. But even then, I thought, well, we'll try this for a little while, and maybe she'll go back, and that's okay, too. I think in her mind it was a slow and indistinct transition, and so she made it in a slow and indistinct way. But when she landed there, all of the ambiguity went away. Lori is grateful that both the kids and teachers in her daughter's life have been supportive and largely unfazed by this change. This kind of shift doesn't mean to them what it means to adults in the world. They are kids, and they are changing all the time. She's not the only transgender kid in her elementary school. Okay, stop right there. Why, does anyone want to examine that? How we got to the point where within 5 years, it went from maybe you had somewhere in the country one kid who had issues to now there's multiple. Anyone want to examine that?
No. Why would I want to look at that?
It's definitely just, you know, it's before. Totally cool. Yeah, up until 5 years ago, society was just horribly oppressing these people who definitely had this condition that absolutely just exists inherently but like, you know, nobody really knew about it. But now it's like, you know, irrespective of how it's been portrayed in the media and all this stuff, and now it's this giant civil rights issue, so to quote unquote. Yeah, you know, it was just waiting there, you know, hidden, buried, but it was always there for sure. Definitely not a product or anything.
No, and there's absolutely no chance that this insane woman who was so intent on having a woman, having a girl baby, just decided that, you know, fuck the guy. She's going to turn what she has into a girl. There's no way that happened. There's no. None of that happened.
A lot of people wrote wishing for my death and that of my kid, she says.
I wonder why.
Not the kid, but yeah.
Then suddenly, for no reason at all, Lori Frankel received multiple death threats in the mail.
Well, here's the punchline. There were a lot of people who wrote to offer me Jesus, and there were a lot of people who wrote and said, I bet you're a Jew. And indeed I am.
That warms my heart. Normies are waking the fuck up.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
And so there were a lot of people who felt that was the answer to a problem that they imagined I had.
Oh, no,
you are the problem. Frankel.
Wasn't no.
She adds, a lot of people also wrote to tell me that I was misguided and that I am ruining this country and I was ruining children and I am the problem of America. I don't. Where's the lie, though?
No kidding. I mean, I guess her complaining about it is somehow the denial, I guess. I don't know.
It's like, could you imagine these people thinking I'm causing a problem? Huh, how weird.
This is why they're getting so
real heads. Real head scratcher. I made no sense to me. It's like totally absurd.
This is why the Jews are freaking out so bad, because people are starting to notice, and they know it. And, you know, again, they wouldn't have to shut us down. They wouldn't have to shut down all these voices if what we were saying wasn't getting through and wasn't well received. And, you know, the truth, basically. But yeah, this is great. This is a happy ending to the story that I didn't expect.
Lori knows that there are challenging decisions ahead about hormone therapy, gender reassignment surgery, and much more, and that they won't be easy. It's frankly terrifying to think about going back into the fray with this, she says. I think, oh no, we did this. We figured this out. We've moved on now.
Yes,
and of course, everything is going to change again. So we try hard to live in a place where this is what it is right now. We will make decisions about what happens next when we have to. We are not in that place yet, and so we cannot make those decisions. And furthermore, making those decisions before it's time locks you in many ways to decisions that I don't want to be wed to. I want to be open to all possibilities, and I want her to be open to all possibilities. I want to have her to be able to be whoever she wants to be.
Oh my God.
Assault Lick in the comments says, no straight man is responsible for kids with pronoun issues. It's all the fault of women and homosexuals. The patriarchy is the cure for this.
Yes.
Nice. Oh my God.
The last thing I'm going to read, because I want to make sure you guys can have time to talk about other stuff as well. And I do have a happy ending story that some people already know what it is, because I talked about it on post. But I want to talk about that as well, because this kind of goes in conjunction with this. So this is how it always is. Was inspired by its author, Transgender Child. This is from NPR from January 2017. On how she reacted when her child first expressed an interest in being a girl. She wanted to wear a dress, and she was a he at the time. And we said, okay, it didn't inspire panic. It didn't seem to be anything to be worried about or alarmed about. It seemed like pretend. She was six. She had just turned six, and it seemed like she was just playing and having fun. And she was just playing and having fun and trying things on.
Hang on. Do you hear that? That's on. If you look on your screen on YouTube, the nose of that woman as she's speaking, it's hitting my microphone.
Good one.
Okay. Chat said my camera's on and scared the hell out of me. I was like, wait a minute, I don't have a camera. And it's just that it stuck. On striking a balance between letting kids express themselves and protecting them, I think that putting all of your faith in the decision-making powers of your small children is probably not the best way forward for anyone. In the book, what happens is that they feel their way through, and I think that's what all of us do in parenting in general. You make a judgment call, and you take your best guess, and you take a shot, and you hope for the best. And it's the parents that are doing this. Got it. And if it works, that's wonderful. And if it doesn't, then you modify. That's what parenting is, figuring out the balance between letting your kids be who they are and protecting them from the world they have to live in.
Sometimes I feel like letting my kids out of the house every morning is the hardest thing I do all day. And again, I think that's the hallmark of parenting. No one out there in the world is ever going to love my kid or get my kid as much as I will. And yet I got to let her go every day anyway. On what she hopes readers will get out of her book. I think it is a topic that scares people, and I think that in part that's because they haven't met anyone, or they don't know any, or though they don't know they've met anyone who's impacted by these issues. There are a lot of transgender people, and there are even more people who are gender nonconforming, and these little kids are just kids. They're the least scary people you can imagine. So one of the things that I hope is that people who read this book will read it and forget about the transgender issues and just be in the embrace of this family and realize that this family is like all families. They love and they keep secrets from one another and they protect one another and they struggle with how to do that and they have these challenges and it's hard, but it isn't scary and it isn't abnormal at all.
No, we are not the same. You're not a real family. You are a mess. You are a mess living in the same household and abusing your age and authority over a younger person.
That isn't even yours, that you adopted to experiment
on. Yes, this is not a family. We're not comparable. No.
On how her daughter feels about the book. On how her son feels about the book. He loves it. He thinks that all books should be written about him. He cannot actually imagine why I would ever consider writing a book about anything else. And he's a big reader, but it is a book for adults. It is not appropriate for him. But I am certainly mindful of the fact, and was while I was writing it, and he will read it someday. And I hope that he will love it, of course, but I also know that he will see that it really is not about him. It's really very fictionalized. And I hope very much that the plot and heartbreak and drama and near misses that happen in this novel, I hope that they will never happen to him. So I'm going to tell you guys a story. And some of you guys know this story. So I know a family. And it's a situation where there's a 12-year-old girl, and her family, she comes from a broken family. Now, her dad does well for himself, and she's very well taken care of. The mom's situation is very messy and complicated. The father has primary custody. The father is marrying, this is where my connection to this, marrying somebody I know. And so the future stepmom who also has a child of her own, has a good relationship with this 12-year-old. And one day, out of the blue, and this 12-year-old got very popular in her peer group, but one day out of the blue, the 12-year-old says she's a lesbian. And the family was freaking out about this and not sure what to do. Because, well, what do you do when a situation like this happens? And I got more details about it. Frankly, I found out that prior to all of this happening, first of all, they let her have social media, which was there's the first mistake right there. But she was on Snapchat and she received I don't know if it was from an older man or another boy or what. She received a dick pic, and this was very upsetting for this girl. This girl has not gone through, and also this girl has not even had her first period yet. So I'm listening to this, and they weren't sure what to do about all of this. And what I said to them was, listen, there seems to be some traumatic experience going on here. She might be a little bit afraid of boys. She actually has no problem confiding in the future stepmom. That's how we found out about the Snapchat thing in the first place. I don't think she understands what any of this is. It's very unlikely. All a lesbian probably is to her is like, oh, that's something special that you get a lot of praise for and you get a lot of attention for. So that's what I am. That's probably what's happening. So what I said to the friend is, sit down with her and talk to her and find out what being a lesbian means to her. She might not even know what that word actually means. And also, if she's insistent on this, like, tell her what it means to be like a lesbian. Don't show her standard fuck party. But I mean, people have this conceptual abstract idea of what LGBT stuff is like, when the lifestyle is extremely horrifying to the average person when they actually see what it entails. That's why standard fuck party is such a potent propaganda tool. So I left it at that, and I got an update recently. I got an update the other day. So future stepmom, talked to the girl. And first, I was happy to hear this. She did some tough love discipline. She said, you're not
told the girl, you're not a lesbian, you're not bisexual. Do you know what a lesbian is? Do you know what that means? And told the girl, that means you're going to be walking down the aisle on your wedding day with another woman, you're marrying another woman, you're expecting a woman to take care of you for the rest of your life. Is that what you want? Is that what you want? And the girl said, you know. I think the family's going to be okay.
Yeah.
There's probably some stuff, the broken family situation, there's probably some stuff that needs to be worked out and discussed, but as I suspected, this girl really didn't know what she was talking about, and it's possible that if the family had reacted really poorly to it, it might have caused her to double down on it in a rebellion type way. Who knows? It's hard to say how that could have turned out, but by basically calmly, being firm, but also trying to explain to her what that actually is in the most sanitized way possible, it put a stop to that. And that's I imagine the reason why I bring the story up, I think, is obvious. It's like this, it's obvious to me this transgender stuff is pushed on the kids. We all know that. Like, I don't need to explain that. Kids don't understand this stuff. A lot of these words have no actual meaning to them. They just see the content as, I get approval for this, I get brownie points for this, I get that's all this is to them. And kids do do silly stuff, it's not uncommon. I think every family's got a story about their son goofing off with, when they're very little, goofing off with if their mother's high heels, walking around and them being very silly. That's not indicative of any kind of gender expression.
Absolutely.
That's a kid just playing around.
Well, and that's what gets me, and it's the adolescence, puberty, all that's very confusing time in a normal, healthy society. All that's a little bit confusing for any kid. In a society like this, I mean, it's just got to be a fucking hellhole. And while parents may be as well-meaning as they are, like good parents, trying to keep their kids protected from this, I mean, the algorithms for YouTube, for all the things that this kid might search for when he's curious about these things, they send them this. It targets them in a way that they talk about. Extremist content radicalizes people. They go down rabbit holes because of the YouTube algorithm. It's not true, of course, but there really is a rabbit hole of this whole truism, of this whole homosexuality, LGBT stuff. It's just a constant parade. And if a kid even shows one sign of doing something, like a girl being a tomboy, or like you said, the little boy, a five-year-old boy putting on his mom's heels and her feather boa and walking around making a joke, they take that as, clearly we have to intervene. Clearly the kid needs to be protected and made a fag and made a trainer or whatever.
Up with the knob.
That's what's out there. And parents are bailing. I actually feel bad for the good parents whose kids are targeted like this. So it's a shitty situation all around. It's going to take a massive reordering society and a whole lot of punishment of the people responsible for this garbage. Sorry, I didn't mean to. That just pissed me off too.
No, it should. It was good. Yeah. I just want to add one thing. I've said this before, but I'll say it again because, repetition is good and with stuff like this. My line in the sand was always transgenderism. And going all the way back to, when I would have identified as a kind of, quasi-anarcho-syndicalist type. But the one thing that I always just hated, to the extent I was, aware, it wasn't even, but prior to... And this was even in the late 90s, and it was just sort of like, I was like, okay, these people are mentally ill, they need help, they do not need surgery, surgery does not help them. And in a lot of ways, basically very little of my, I haven't moved so much in a lot of ways, and I definitely haven't moved on that, and the rest of this satanic pig American system has come in lockstep, and now, yes, being a father and seeing this being pushed, it makes it very, not that I wasn't already kind of, just very upset about it, but seeing the propaganda coming Siege Baby's way, I should probably stop talking before I start bed posting. Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to make sure that you guys had a chance to talk about other stuff.
I think the only other thing I have is this Biden nominating Deborah Lipstadt as the Holocaust special envoy. Or the anti-Semitism. Do you want to go into that, or do you want to?
Sure. I just want to do a possible on-air correction. I could have sworn I had heard that Jazz Jennings was adopted, but the fact is that because the family changed their name for the sake of the media, we actually don't know that much about the family's background other than that they are very Jewish. I believe Jazz probably was adopted, but I can't find the proof of that.
The idea that a Jewish family would adopt a Palestinian boy and cut his dick off and humiliate him like that, it may be bullshit, but I believe it.
Exactly. I'm putting that in, it's bullshit, but I believe it categorically.
Didn't she herself literally just say, like, you know, it's more real because it's fake?
Yeah, exactly. Let me go to the quote. Like, I'm gonna default to Lori Frankel on all this. Just because it's made up doesn't mean it's real. Made up is the most powerful real there is.
Yeah. So and speaking of,
what a perfect transition to the Holocaust. So this is from The Hill. Biden nominates Holocaust historian as special envoy to combat anti-Semitism. And at first, you know, your first reaction sometimes is your best one, which was just, grug, no, like, woman, this stupid. But
man, we got to call Dogbot on this one. Actually, I don't even sure that we necessarily need to.
That's a fair point. But
Dogbot, more like Zogbot.
this is, in the words of our eternal enemies, a mitzvah. The face of this woman, who is so horrible, and the more she's revealed to the public, the better for us, because they presented her in that movie. Who was the actress who played her? Was it Rachel Weisz?
Rachel Weisz, or what's her name? It's, yeah, is it Weisz?
Rachel Weisz was in Schindler's List, for sure. She's Jewish, and she's like a favorite for these kind of things.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure it was, yeah, she, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm not insane.
So this otherwise somewhat attractive Jewish actress plays what looks like a man, an Irish man, to be honest. can you see the picture? I'm sorry, it looks like looks like the drunk at the corner in the Dublin bar who's like, oh, one more for the road. Come on now. Come on, me artis.
His real name is Dobby O'Lippy.
Okay. But the story is, President Biden on Friday nominated Holocaust historian and Emory University professor Deborah Lipstadt to serve as special envoy to combat and monitor anti-Semitism. And just for real quick context, she sued David Irving over – help me here with the exact details, because it's not about, oh, he was denying the Holocaust. It was over libel. He sued her because she called him a denier, a Holocaust denier. And he argued that, here's my research, that doesn't make me a denier, it's just, here's the actual facts of it. And they won a libel case, but they like to claim that that court ruling, therefore, is proof that the Holocaust happened. You know, just like the phony sham Nuremberg trials, they want to point to that as, this is history, because of this one particular ruling, court ruling, this is the way history unfolded, and you can't question it. So she's a horrible human being, she has no scholarship to her. All she does is promote the Holocaust narrative. She's never done anything of noteworthiness. She's never really published anything that anyone's ever looked at.
No. Well, she's a great example of this phenomenon you'll find increasingly prevalent in the academy. Like, people like, I mean, I use the phrase grievance studies all the time, and it's a good phrase, but people in our thing don't necessarily know, because they don't necessarily, you know, super close to it or haven't really been exposed to how the sausage is made within the walls of the ivory tower. Ethnic studies departments, the worst examples of these are Jewish studies, obviously, and African-American studies. Mm-hmm. Like, what they do is essentially political advocacy but then they slap academic credentials on it and get
fan fiction.
Credit,
and
yeah,
fan fiction.
It's not like, because, okay, you can go into a department of, like, you know, for example, South Asian studies. Harvard has a really well regarded South Asian studies department. You know, like, if you want to succeed in that kind of an environment, you have to know Sanskrit, you have to know Pali, you have to know, you know, history, you have to read text, you have to learn how to look at manuscripts, you have to do archival work. I don't want to, like, paint with too broad a brush here, but
the point is, like, when you're talking about, like, African-American studies, like, the full extent of it is, like, you know, you read some Martin Luther King speeches, of course, they were written by Stanley Levinson. You read James Cone and you read Ibram X. Kendi, and you write, you know, a thinly veiled, you know, hate speech, anti-white propaganda. And they give you, they hand you a credential that now says that you're entitled to a salary at a PhD.
You get an
level.
A if your essay isn't covered in watermelon juice and fried chicken grease.
See, Cornel West got tenure when he was at Harvard. He got tenure because in order to get tenure, you needed to have some like level of academic production. He made a rap album. And this was considered tenure worthy production and on a par with like writing a serious academic book that, you know, with like thousands of footnotes that took years of archival work and editing. And so that's just to say, like, so when we're talking about Deborah Lipstadt in particular, I'm not saying I'm not saying that it's good or bad even necessarily. I'm just saying like there, you can take angles even on something like Jewish studies where it's like, okay, well, this person is an expert in the Dead Sea Scrolls or something, or the Hebrew Bible. You know, they know ancient Hebrew.
Yeah, so
but she doesn't do any of that. She doesn't do any of that.
No.
She's purely a propagandist, but she's never elevated to this position despite her total lack of any kind of anything remotely resembling like serious hardcore academic work.
Exactly. And the reason I say that she's going to be such a boon for us, if she is confirmed and if she gets a full run of 4 years or whatever the term is because she's a neurotic. She's going to see anti-Semitism in everything. And let me go ahead with the story. Lipstadt, who is the founding director of the Emory's Institute for Jewish Studies and has served in roles at the Holocaust Memorial Museum, was viewed as the likely choice for the position. She has written a number of books on the Holocaust and was previously a member of the State Department's Advisory Committee on Religious Persecution Abroad. Here's where it gets interesting. If confirmed by the Senate, Lipstadt will have the rank of ambassador and be responsible for developing and implementing policy to combat discrimination against Jewish people worldwide. So she's going to be the first person in the U.S. government to be given the equivalent of an ambassadorship's power without actually being an ambassador. She's just there to monitor anti-Semitism. Fortunately, this will put to rest any concerns that the Jews are in charge of the government, because clearly, why would Jews want a position like this? Somebody to sniff out anti-Semitism worldwide. It continues.
Well, yeah, now here's what they would say. It's like, how can we be in power if we need this level of you know, government position to stop our oppression? Clearly, we're in such
dire straits here.
Given the fact that this even exists.
Yeah. Congress moved to elevate the special envoy on anti-Semitism to the rank of ambassador in January. The position was filled by Ilan Carr, whom former President Trump tapped in 2019. Just in case you wondered where this particular role of anti-Semitism czar came from. So, that's what we're going to have to see going forward, is this Yenta running around.
Oh God, anti-Semitism czar!
Yeah, she's the anti-Semitism czar.
And no, I'm the czar of anti-Semitism, all right.
That's true. She's the monitor of anti-Semitism. Well, I monitor it as well, so. Really, maybe we could, like, collaborate with her. I think we could have some kind of synergy going on. Anyway, there's this, and that's all I had about it. It's this horrible woman. They're getting so blatant about how, you know, it's all got to be about Jews and anti-Semitism. And including, if you read this article, this is The Hill. It's an American publication, but just 2 days ago, you had some Jewish organization demanding that people stop hyphenating anti-Semitism, because it, you know, when you look at the word with the hyphen in it, you realize the anti is a reaction to the other thing. They don't want
that. The existence of anti-Semitism implies the existence of Semitism.
Yes.
So what they're saying is the hyphen's basically the equivalent of their big Jew nose.
Yeah.
Well, the hyphen.
Why do you think we adopted the hyphen as our symbol? The hyphen is our symbol for our publications. It's because of this, because we believe in the hyphen and anti-Semitism. The real story is finally told about the hyphen. No, I'm kidding. It's just so that's where it is. So, like, 2 days after this Jewish organization demands it, The Hill, ostensibly a actual journalistic publication, professional, adopts their writing style. So, you know, keep pulling that mask off, Jews. It really works for you. It worked for you in the past.
I thought we adopted the hyphen because when it's all black, like the way it looks for the national hyphen, you can almost squint your eyes and see the tracks leading to Auschwitz. I thought this was like an esoteric dog whistle we were doing.
I like that one even better.
Yeah, that's up there with the hyphen.
I was born to the hyphen.
With the esoteric parentheses.
All right, that's all I got. Anybody else have anything you want to...
before you? Well, if what she's going to be now is basically an ambassador, is it, I guess, literally ambassador will be her title?
No, well, she'll have the equivalent power of an ambassador, but she will not be called, like, Ms. Ambassador, as far as I understand it. It's just that it's just within the hierarchy of the U.S. government, like ambassadorships being appointed and approved by the Senate, carry a certain weight and requirement and power, and her office will be the equivalent of an ambassadorship.
I feel like I have the grounds to and legitimacy to then establish the embassy of anti-Semitism in Washington, D.C.
Ooh, I like where you're going with this. I like where your head's at.
We're going to have diplomatic ties between the combating anti-Semitism diplomat. There must be an anti-Semitism embassy for such negotiations to take place. You can only get there by train. We'll have our own stop on the D.C. Metro.
Nice. All right, anybody else? Let's get the hell out of here. Y'all want to do plugs and get going? Or did we have anything I missed?
I guess not. I mean, we actually said we're gonna stop by a certain time. We actually came under. That's
even with a break.
Well, it's because they didn't do any of the stuff I had.
Well, we got five minutes, Nikkei. You can do something.
Yeah, we'll slip it in there.
Well, the Gaddafi's son is extremely long form. Like narrative article, so don't have enough time for that. I can't even see the full post of this, so I guess we can jump into this one. It's from the Washington Post. I have no idea what they were thinking with this headline, but the first black woman to run St. Louis is shaking up the city with a war on normal.
Oh, yeah, really? You are.
It was Juneteenth weekend in St. Louis, and the new mayor was leading the celebrations. She hopscotched from cookouts to charity runs, grooved classic R&B songs, and proclaimed that her city would be among the nation's first to pay reparations to the descendants of enslaved people. 2 weeks later, Tashara Jones spent a quiet weekend with her family. In the process, she became the first St. Louis mayor in decades to skip the city's 4th of July parade, an event long sponsored by a group with a dubious racial record. Oh, St. Louis would need to have some quote-unquote tough conversations, Jones said, before she felt comfortable joining the party. The tale of the two weekends in many ways encapsulate the young tenure of St. Louis's history-making mayor. The 49-year-old unapologetically embraces her black identity, champions progressive policy ideas long dismissed as fringe, and doesn't seem to mind who she might alienate along the way. At a time when other public officials are desperately hoping for a return to normal after more than a year of pandemic-spawned upheaval, Jones is rowing hard in the other direction. Quote, "We're trying to break people out of normal," said Jones, sitting amid the faded grandeur of City Hall. "Whatever normal was, that didn't work for a lot of St. Louis," unquote. I think I could just leave it there.
Yeah.
Whatever normal was not working for a lot of St. Louis. That's not what normal means. Normal means it is working for most people.
I feel like we just need to put a bookmark in this story and look at the city of St. Louis in 6 months or a year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This does not augur well.
War on normal.
Yeah. Because that... As you've seen, like with Kim Fox, who's the prosecutor and the other Kim prosecutor, I think she was in Chicago. That they just didn't bother showing up.
Kim Fox is the Chicago one. No, the one you're thinking of that didn't show up. That was a St. Louis prosecutor.
Oh, okay, yeah. So both of them were Kims. They're both black womans, and just the absolute incompetence. And because once they win their office, they go shopping. They buy Gucci bags, and you know. There's no actual work to be done. So St. Louis is already a piece of shit of a place, but it's just going to be a collapse. It's going to be post-apocalyptic in a year, I bet.
Totally unrelated, but I came across the best new black woman's name I'd ever heard yesterday. You'll never guess. Croatia. And I'm not kidding.
Nicolas Salo eternally.
I gotta know how it's spelled, though.
Yugoslavs can never recover from this.
It's spelled however you want to. It's a black name.
I mean, look at the proof there.
K-H-R-O.
Montenegro. I mean, the Montenegrins. I mean, you got that. Croatia's obviously a black woman's name. I mean,
they like those tracksuits, man. They like those tracksuits, like Run DMC.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay. Okay. Croatia, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Serbia. Okay, yeah.
Herzegovina.
Yeah, you tell me that those black women names.
Serbia, like with the apostrophe, Aya with an H.
Serbia Pittman.
Serbia Pittman.
That might be the show title as well.
I still like Rachel Lovin, but yes. Nikkei on fire with the.
Well, think of it. If you picture in your mind a tracksuit, new Nike, gold chains, and a flat brimmed baseball cap, you either think of a black person or Croatian, right?
Macedonia.
Okay. Well, who was the leader of Yugoslavia for a long time? Tito. Come on, do you know a white guy named Tito? I rest my case.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get the hell out of here. Let's do some plugs and go. Morjoy.
He's gonna plug his. Just listen to as a companion piece. Listen to the Hyper Podcastism with Marty. We're working on a Death of the Author one for the next one, and also I got some other stuff in the works right now. It's just people get what my issue is right now. So
sure, okay. And then there's that thing that you and I were talking about. We'll put that on the back burner as well.
Yeah. Let's not promise anything we're not going to deliver just yet.
If we announce it, that means it'll guarantee it never happens.
Exactly.
So there's a little tease for you guys. DK, how about you, sir?
Yes, as Borzoi mentioned, we have a companion piece to the Hyper Podcastism on Marty's book. We have a Culture Terror episode on Marty's book. We actually we went up front on that we were going full Death of the Author and sort of give a little preview of like sort of what that discussion on Hyper Podcastism is going to be like, and I'm very excited about that. But yeah, we didn't want Marty on. We didn't even listen to the Hyper Podcastism. I've since listened to it and it's great. And I was a little bit afraid that we would overlap too much, but I think they're actually very, very nice complimentary discussions. There's interesting points of intersection. My favorite was that at one point Mike mentions that he really identifies with Walden, and I sort of mentioned at one point that I identify with Bill Stevens, which I think is kind of a funny like duality there. But if you like Marty's book, which you should, because you should have already read it, and you would definitely like it if you have read it, you have bought it and read it, right?
You aren't illegally listening to the Third Rail without having bought Marty's book, have you?
You will be prosecuted.
Yes. I think if you enjoyed the book and you want to think about more of its themes and its do like kind of a deeper analysis and stuff, that these two the Hyper Podcastism and our Culture Terror episode are both really great kind of complimentary discussions. And then I don't know, I guess this will just be a special for our listeners. I kind of wanted to keep this a little bit under wraps, but we just recorded yesterday. It'll be next week's episode of the National Institute for Gamer Review on Skyrim with very, very special guest James Alsop. So hype for that. And we had a great discussion, and we'll definitely have him on in the future as well. But yeah, I just wanted to little sneak peek for you guys.
Awesome. Nikkei, I am sorry. Last, like 2 weeks ago, you and I were on, and we got cut off. We talked for 15 minutes. We had some good stuff.
We did.
And then like 3 weeks before that, I think I didn't know that you had some plugs and we had some kind of a timer situation and I cut you off. And so once again, I disrespected you today. I want you to bring back the Gaddafi stuff for next week because I definitely want to talk about that. But yes. Nikkei, what do you got going on, sir? So, and again, my apologies for short shifting you there.
As always, we've got the Young Whites on therightstuff.biz. Check it out. Also, new book, new product, Antelope Hill Publishing, Why We Fight. I'm in there. A lot of people are in there. Buy the book, read the book, share
Light
the book.
Lightus actually our longtime contributor to Third Rail also had a piece in there too. So
lots of listeners in the book. This was a great compilation of poetry and essays on the subject of why we fight and different perspectives on it. and I recommend everybody get it and read what your comrades had to say.
Nice. Okay, very quickly, thank you to all the people who came out live today. Thank you, Frank, for producing and putting all this together for us. Go to national-justice.com. Great journalism there from Eric Stryker. Distant-mag.com. Great long-form journalism from the people who bring you Fascist Nation. NationalJusticeParty.com. Go there. Learn about the organization. Go to AntelopeHillPublishing.com. They're creating an entire ecosystem of content, high-quality content, geared towards us. Support these guys. And then join us at the TRS Radio Network behind the paywall for premium content at therightstuff.biz/paywall. And I guess that's it for this week. Remember, trust no woman or Jew, for interest grows without rain, and women just are. Mr. Producer, hail victory. See ya, Kyle. We'll be right back.